This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Seven games to go in the Premier League season, European semi-finals soon to come, and the FA Cup semi-finals this weekend. Get your suits and ties at the ready, because I think we are officially in what they call the business end of the season. Liverpool and City with a breathtaking battle last weekend in the top flight. What will Wembley serve up for us in the FA Cup semi-finals? Those two sides went through in Europe midweek as well, with Manchester City involved in some chaotic scenes. Is that aggression welcome in the modern game? Is that what fans want to see? We'll tackle that on today's show. Plus, there are some big Premier League games to get stuck into at both ends of the table, with the top four and relegation picture still yet to be decided too. We wouldn't have it any other way here on The Dugout, the award-winning Premier League podcast featuring former top-flight professionals. My name's Niall, and alongside me on the show today, someone who won the title and the FA Cup with Everton in the 1980s, Trevor Stephen is here. Hello, Trevor. How you doing, mate? I mean, I know you've been a bit stressed because you've been moving house recently. How are you feeling?
Exactly, stressed. That's it. Got it in one. Slash anxiety, slash not enough hours in the day. But good to be alongside you today, mate.
Yeah, and that's not even taking in Everton or Burnley's current struggles. That's without all of those things to worry about.
That's well. Just heap it on. Keep it going.
Take it all in one go. That's the best way to deal with it. And joining Trevor, a man who played hundreds of top flight matches and has seen the good, the bad and the ugly at St. Mary's. And we're not talking about his moustache from back in the day. Francis Benali is with us too. Franny, how are you feeling, mate?
Yeah, by the sounds of it, I'm feeling better than Trevor. So, but then again, I haven't moved house this week. So, that's good cause. Yeah, looking forward to the show, guys.
Yeah, good to have you both with us. As we say, FA Cup semi-finals this weekend. Liverpool against Man City. Those two sides facing each other twice in the space of a week. Last week it was the Premier League. This week it's the FA Cup. We'll come on to that very shortly. But first, Trevor, I wanted to ask you this. The team you played in for Everton during the 80s, widely regarded as one of the best Everton teams ever. But have you been watching through your fingers lately with how things are going at Goodison Park?
Oh, it's just been unbearable, really. I would call it unbearable. If I look back a few games ago, it was worrying. But then we didn't pick up any points over several games. And then it gets to the crunch point, which, of course, was the Man United game last week. And there was so much riding on that. And it's only just stopped, you know, the carousel, if you want, of speculation whether they're going to go down or not, because it's that's only the job half done, isn't it? Well, not even half done. It's just turned the tables. And what I did see was a lot more togetherness, a lot more spirit, a lot more doggedness, a lot more about everything that you need to win a football match was present against Manchester United. So yeah, it's not easy watching Everton, and of course Burnley on the other side. I had to watch the Burnley-Everton match and I couldn't win, really, because if I won, I lost. it just wasn't a great game. I was commentating on that game as well. So it was edgy stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Burnley a little bit later on in the show. Of course, Everton not in action in the Premier League this weekend. Burnley are. But why not begin at what's clearly the marquee fixture this weekend, Liverpool against Manchester City. Doesn't matter what the competition is. This time it's the FA Cup, but it doesn't matter where they play. These two teams will always attract plenty of attention. It's a Saturday 3:30 kickoff at Wembley. Do you think, Franny, this game will be played in a similar vein to what we saw 6 days ago at the Etihad? Because it feels like an eternity ago already. So much has happened in that space between games.
It does, Niall, doesn't it? Yeah, what a game it was as well. I think it certainly lived up to its expectation levels, didn't it? You know, goals, the styles that both football teams play, and two teams just going at it. And I think for the neutral and anyone watching those kind of games, you want to see those sort of teams really having a go at one another. And I think we've seen in the past maybe one or two teams that, you know, are good sides, but maybe just take a different approach tactically and maybe go a little bit more defensively, and that sort of park the bus scenario, and it spoils it as a game sometimes. So to see that fixture play out as it did in the Premier League, I feel that it's going to be something similar again in the FA Cup semi-final. But I'm just wondering about how the exploits in Europe and injuries and all the rest of it and things like that is going to play a factor in this cup time.
It's definitely worth mentioning that for sure. And we'll talk about it in a bit more detail in a sec. But did you get the feeling, Franny, watching it? Because I certainly did, that we were watching two teams that are just, I mean, we'll be talking about these two teams in 15, 20 years as two of the best to play in the Premier League era.
Yeah, I think we've spoke on a previous show, haven't we, that, you know, you have these rivalries and, you know, Trevor, I remember sort of from his era, and there was, you know, United were probably the team that dominated through, you know, the bulk of my career. You know, City and Liverpool are certainly building that now. And it's up to others to break into that and disrupt that to a degree. But certainly at this moment in time, we're seeing that rivalry and, you know, sort of competition between the two sides sort of developing and growing. And, you know, it's no surprise that they're as successful as they have been in recent times, but also this season on all fronts. And, you know, and it's wonderful to watch, and it must be wonderful to play in as well as a player. You know, when you're at a top side on top of your game, these are the matches that I think, you know, these kind of players and clubs want to be playing as often as they can.
How much will those European exploits on Wednesday have an impact here, or do you think it will at all?
No, it probably won't look like it's having an impact, you know, because the players are so you know, capable of digging deep and just, you know, bringing out performances. I think this game, by the end of this game, I think it'll be well spent, you know, both sides. They've been well aware of this pile-up of intense fixtures at the highest level, at the elite level. They've known that was coming. You can prepare for it, but only so far. And I really do think that by the end of the 90 minutes, you know, if it's decided in 90 minutes, that there will be nothing left. You know, everything will be left there out on the field, and they're going to need some time off after that. When I say time off, I mean absolutely low-level recovery training, probably no training, because the mileage that these guys are doing at the moment, and that, you know, it's on the field and off the field, the travelling, the intensity of it all, can be very draining. The only thing that can keep your morale up is good results, you know. So that's the key element. Keep getting the good results, and just take every game as it comes. But yeah, it's a massive strain physically, I think, now for these sides.
Yeah, you're right. The question is how much gas is left in the tank for these two teams. And naturally, when they face off, trebles and quadruples start getting discussed. Liverpool are still on course to win four trophies this season. Manchester City could win a treble, but one of those sides' hopes of doing something pretty remarkable will end this weekend, depending on who wins and gets through to the FA Cup final. Is it too early to start talking about those sorts of accolades and achievements, Franny? And if that's the case, when do you start making that a talking point? Because we're at the semi-final stage here. There's only seven games to go of the Premier League season, so we are in the crunch stages. So I can understand why some fans are starting to hype it up a bit.
Oh, most definitely. I think quite naturally for us, you know, doing what we do, it's a talking point. It's something that you can't ignore at this stage of the season. And quite clearly, as a supporter of one of those teams as well, you're clearly going to be, you know, wishing that your team can pick up, you know, numerous pieces of silverware this season. And it's coming to a head that is just brilliant. And as you say, it's going to be a disappointing outcome for one of the sides at the weekend. I just wonder whether, you know, from what we saw in the Premier League game last weekend and the way that the two sides went about the match, whether we just see something tactically that one of the managers might do to try and come up with something a little bit left field, you know, and I've got a feeling that maybe Pep Guardiola is the one that might do it a little bit more than Jurgen Klopp, just to try and find that little advantage somewhere. And especially on the back of, we don't know how the sort of the injuries at this moment that we're recording to De Bruyne and Kyle Walker. So I nearly said Kyle Walker-Peters then. I'm so used to saying but yeah, Kyle Walker are going to be. And, you know, it was a pretty bruising encounter, wasn't it? And their European exploits. So, yeah, coming back to your question, Carl. Niall, I've got Carl on the brain now, sorry.
Yeah, that's
all going on. Yeah, to answer your question, Niall, yeah, quite clearly it's something that's going to be hyped up, and even more so, I think, for whichever the side, you know, is the victor at the weekend.
I just want to check which one of you moved house this week. Is it definitely Trevor? Definitely Trevor.
Do you know, just on your point there, Franny, about the tactical possibilities that the sides could go with or not go with, and you're right, it's going to be Guardiola. The way that he manipulates and manoeuvres that front line of his, with people going into the false nine and popping up in all sorts of different positions. Because you look at Liverpool, you know exactly where Salah's going to be for 90 minutes. You know he's going to be standing out there on the right-hand side, and that's it. Yeah, it's so effective because he's such a talented footballer. So, yeah, I think City have got potentially a trick up their sleeve because of that fluidity that Guardiola has in that squad. But I don't know if you could over confuse it as well. You know, he gets picked on a little bit, Guardiola, for experimenting a bit in some of the big games. But he's not doing too badly off it. But I just wonder if the players could handle another change of format, because you know that their demands on them are intense from Guardiola, as they are in Klopp. But it's a bit more regimented, isn't it? And with Jurgen Klopp, we kind of know what he's going to do: have the back four, have the three, and have the three up front. So, but it's going to be every man. It's going to be every man or every battle, every duel on the field, as it always is, and who's going to come out on top.
Yeah, I certainly have a tendency to agree with you both when it comes to the tactical side of things. I think we are more likely to see Pep Guardiola tinker with things. And like you said, Franny, a lot of injuries still up in the air in terms of team selection and fitness after that game with Atletico. We'll talk about that game in a little bit more detail shortly. But Pep Guardiola's words were that his side are in big trouble for the rest of the season, which I thought was very interesting. Let's move on then. Liverpool against Manchester City is the Cup semi-final on Saturday, but the one on Sunday is Chelsea against Crystal Palace, two London clubs, and Chelsea have spent plenty of time at Wembley over the last few years. Crystal Palace certainly haven't done. They very rarely get to the National Stadium on the big stage, so a huge chance for them. And with the way that they've played against some of the bigger sides this season, Trevor, they've obviously taken a good number of points off Man City this season, for example. They actually must fancy their chances against Chelsea here.
I think what Patrick Vieira has done is he's completely changed the mindset in Crystal Palace. He's changed the way that they have always been in the Premier League on the back foot, and he's got them to go onto the front foot and really get at teams. So Palace are going into this semi-final deservedly, and with the chance, as you say, of doing something against Chelsea. Their forward players have been particularly impressive this season. And you think of Zaha, but he's been involved, he's been excellent. One of the interesting things for me, like Jordan Ayew, is how he keeps getting the game, right? And now he's got a goal as well. And Patrick Vieira stuck with him because he knows what he brings to the team. He kind of knows his squad so well, I think, Vieira. And they are definitely in with a chance. And so it's a rare trip to Wembley for their fans, who I have to say are probably one of the best groups of fans in the Premier League. The way that they make Selhurst Park a real difficult venue for opposition teams to go to. They've got a chance. And of course, Chelsea ran themselves into the ground, didn't they, midweek? And again, we're going back to that topic of how much is left in the tank. For Chelsea, Palace had a much more comfortable lead up to this game than Chelsea have had. It's definitely a game that Palace can go and not get overawed, I believe, by the occasion. I think they've got a really, really good chance.
Yeah, I mean, the fans are really looking forward to it, and you can understand why. You know, the club's 117 years old and Crystal Palace have never won a major trophy, not even an FA Cup or a League Cup in years gone by. So a great opportunity for them. But Chelsea have looked a lot better since their defeat to Brentford. And you'll know all about that, Franny, being a Southampton man. Your side were beaten quite soundly by them last week in the Premier League. They did lose their Champions League tie on aggregate in Madrid, but they can be pretty proud of their display because they gave it a damn good go and they look like they're in much better form than they were just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, as you touched on, Niall, you know, I was at St Mary's for that game when they played Southampton, and right from the first whistle, they you know, it could have been more, to be honest. I mean, I think it was a combination of Southampton being pretty poor on the day, but you can't take anything away from Chelsea. They were just absolutely outstanding, and Mason Mount was just controlling things. You know, I was quite pleased to see him come off the pitch and be substituted when he was, because he was causing chaos on the day for Southampton. So, you know, their European exploits. You know, they'll be frustrated and disappointed that they've gone out of the competition quite clearly. But you know, it's that stage of the competition now where you're up against the best sides, the best players, and Karim Benzema scoring four of the five goals that Madrid scored. You know, is just a player that's, you know, maturing in his latter years to another level. And you know, when you've got players in that kind of form and belief and confidence, and you have a team that has those kind of individuals on form, they're hard to play against and get results against. So yeah, it's going to be a reshift and a focus for Chelsea. You'd have to say that, you know, a top four finish is pretty much certain for them. So Champions League football is guaranteed for them next season. But you know, given the turmoil that the club's going through, you know, it's a good opportunity for them to get back on track and get themselves to an FA Cup final and potentially a piece of silverware this season.
It feels like a very Chelsea thing that they would go on this season and win the FA Cup after all of the stuff that's happened off the pitch. You know, even when they were kind of way down in the Premier League, they were sort of sixth, seventh one season. They went on and won the Champions League then in 2012. So it feels like there's always something brewing underneath with Chelsea. And I think it's interesting what you mentioned about Chelsea and the experienced players that they have, because you've played at Wembley for England. I know it's a different stadium fundamentally now, Trevor, but in terms of that experience of playing at Wembley, the Chelsea players will have that in abundance, whereas most of the Crystal Palace players probably won't. Does that ever play into things when you come into these big games like this or not?
Well, it can do, but at the end of the day, you've still got to play your 90 minutes and you've got to play well. And I think that's the challenge that Palace have got, that, you know, that they don't get caught up in the semi-final, the thought of it, and actually just play Chelsea as they would approach, you know, a game against anyone, a game that they've got to go and win. How did they win against Chelsea? They've got to outrun them, outfight them, outbattle them, and use the ball well, keep it when they can, and not give up possession easily when they have it. There's definitely a feeling that I have about Chelsea. They were so disappointed with going out after, you know, the valiant effort at Real Madrid, which looked like they'd be kicking themselves because they couldn't close the door, and they got themselves into a brilliant position. And I think that there could be a little bit of an element of a hangover from that. That's what Crystal Palace have got to see if that is the case. But you're right, the more familiar you are with your surroundings, i.e. the Chelsea players and Wembley, it's certainly not a negative. But you know, you've got to think about the other things that could be affecting the Chelsea players as they go onto the field. A big disappointment, and you know, and the domestic situation, they won't have a trophy this year by the looks of things if they don't get get this FA Cup or follow through with this FA Cup trophy. So we shall see, time will tell. But there's probably more evenly balanced this particular tie than it has been, it would have been in the years previous to Patrick Vieira taking over at Palace.
Well, who will make the cup final? We'll find out this weekend. Chelsea versus Crystal Palace on Sunday and Liverpool against Manchester City. Now, it was Champions League action midweek and there was a massive scuffle in the tunnel after City versus Atletico Madrid. It sparked a really interesting debate and we're going to talk about that next here on The Dugout.
The Dugout, Premier League preview. Football Social Daily. The Dugout, Premier League preview. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Dugout, the podcast featuring former top flight professionals Francis Benali and Trevor Steven, both with me on today's episode of the podcast. And midweek, there was a really entertaining 0-0 draw in the Champions League involving Manchester City and Atletico Madrid. City progressing through to the Champions League semi-finals at Atleti's expense. But a big debate has been rumbling on social media after Atletico's behaviour in that game against City. And one of the commentators during the game remarked that the kind of fracas and the coming together of all the players getting involved and pushing and shoving was something that we don't want to see. But was that commentator right? Do fans like that sort of drama, Franny? What do you think? Because it was certainly an entertaining watch as a neutral. I'm sure it was much more nerve-wracking if you were a Manchester City fan. But you don't see that too often nowadays. Maybe you would have seen that more so when yourself and Trevor were playing. What's your take on the whole thing?
I think, like you say, it's probably because it's something we don't really witness a huge amount of nowadays. And quite clearly, Atletico, there's a style of football under Simeone that... shall we say that sometimes boils over, and that for want of a better phrase, that passion and I guess aggression within the game can quite easily overstep the mark. Yes, even as players, commentators, pundits, supporters, we want to see passion, enthusiasm, aggression to a degree in the game, but there comes a point where those for want. I think I saw another description. Those dark arts of how the game is played. You know, there's certain things you don't want to see, and quite clearly you don't want to see players endangered through an injury or something like that. But it's incredible sometimes how, you know, and I've been there with a little bit of red mist myself on occasions in the past. But how players can just sort of almost like lose their head at a certain stage of a game or. You know, a competition, or when you look like you're going to be going out of the competition, and all of a sudden that the juices just flow in a different way, and it can boil over very, very quickly. But we see it, you know, not often nowadays. But and I'm sure Trevor would have his own experiences. But you know, I throw my mind back to not just the playing days, but also the training ground with your own squad. You know, like. Quite often with certain characters and personalities, you know, it could be all the sparks and fists would be flying in a training session, you know, between your own teammates at times. And I think that just boils down to maybe sometimes the competitive edge that and spirit that a lot of players have at that level.
Do you know what? It's a great point, and it's one that I think is often overlooked, Trevor. I don't know whether you'd agree with this, but I seem to find it a bit strange when people are shocked that teammates might have a bit of a scrap on the training ground. And I suppose it's like any other workplace. You go into an office with 30 people. The chances are you're not going to get on with all of those people. There might be someone there that you don't see eye to eye with. When you've got a highly charged environment, when you've got 28, 30 lads all vying for 11 spots on a match day, you can understand why occasionally things might boil over and a few fists might be thrown here and there. So is that something that maybe because we don't get access to that sort of thing on the training ground that people are surprised at when it comes to the surface that, you know, teammate X and teammate Y have had a scrap, but yet on a Saturday they'll go out and put their differences aside and it will work for the team?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, Franny would agree, I think, with this, that, you know, being a footballer is a brilliant career to have or to experience. But beyond that, it still is it's a daily job. It's a daily go to work job, and you want to achieve the best that you can in your workplace. For us, it's been on football training training grounds and been in, you know, stadia around the country. But when you go into each and every training session, there's always, you know, the squad is not 11 people, it's 20 to 25 people who are all vying for success. And you can only do that if you're actually playing in the 11 shirts. You've only got the opportunity to do it. And football is very much of a mood as well, the mood that you're in. You come off a defeat, your mood's down. You come off a victory, your mood's up. You come in on a victory, but you weren't playing, so your mood's not quite up. You know, you're quite happy, you're reasonably happy, but you want to be experiencing getting picked for the team. And that can overflow. It could be a mistimed tackle. It could be someone just not in the best of spirits and something can happen. You know, again, like Franny, I've several occasions. I remember one Everton game away at Queen's Park Rangers a long time ago when they had plastic pitches, you know, back then, long, long time. And we had some characters on our team, and they had some characters in their team. I think Simon Stainrod got flattened by Pat van den Hout because he had a kick at Andy Gray, but Andy Gray was already having a punch out at him as well. And then, you know, everybody bar Neville Southall was involved, and myself, because I'm not that type, you know, Franny. I'm not really a, you know, I'm more of a dancer than a fighter. So, yeah, it does happen. And but again, what happened in Madrid, Atletico are on the verge of going out of their dream is about to end. It's minutes away. And that was one of the ingredients that took it over the edge. And they're obviously wound up by a manager who is vociferous all the time, 100%. And that is mirrored in the way that his team, you wouldn't expect anything less, by the way. Simeone wouldn't expect anything less than what happened there, that, you know, make your opposition know all about it, that you're in a game and that you'll do anything to win. And that's what Atletico stooped to try and get players involved and sent off and try and make a change in the game's environment. But yeah, it's all part and parcel of the game. And I would imagine that it always will be. It can't change. You've got those personal drives for success.
A few minutes ago, Franny, you mentioned that red mist descending. So what are those games like to play in? What are those games with that extra bit of needle like to play in? And are there any memories you've got from maybe some similar occasions to what we saw midweek?
Yeah, that, I think sometimes it can boil down to just maybe a little bit of a history with either a team you've come up against maybe the previous season or a particular player. There might have been a little run-in you've had with someone in the past, and all of a sudden it doesn't take much to ignite that again. I think looking back on my career personally, and I don't know about Trevor and some of the players he played with, but I think it would have helped me. You know, I was so sort of like pumped myself. I wouldn't need teammates or management or a crowd to lift me any higher. And I think I almost needed someone in my ear saying, you know, just wind it back a bit, Franny. You know, and I think it wasn't until maybe the latter years that I became a bit more experienced and realised I didn't have to be flying into every tackle and things like that. And that I became maybe a little bit of a better player in some ways, or certainly from a temperament point of view with the experience. But yeah, it can just happen in a flash, you know, and and I actually remember one scenario or one management team actually that would intentionally on a Friday morning, we used to do a training session when we were at the Dell where we wouldn't always go out on grass. We'd just go in what we called the gym. It was almost like a breeze block walled sort of internal gym on a wooden floorboard surface. And you just have these small sided games on a Friday morning, do a few warm ups, a few stretches. And then once you went into these little small sided games, the staff would intentionally give bad decisions, and the guys would start reacting to that. And of course the competitiveness, and if a ball rolled into the corner and you were running to the corner with, you know, someone charging in behind you, you need your wing mirrors on because you knew you were going to get clattered or someone would push you or shove you into the wall. And literally on the brink of it all boiling over, the whistle would blow, the management would be happy and go, right, okay, guys, hit the showers, let's see you tomorrow. And they'd hope it would almost continue into the Saturday. So, yeah, sometimes it's done intentionally by one or two people, but quite often it's just those rivalries that can spark it a little bit, or quite clearly on my situation on once or twice, it would just blow up out of nothing.
You got to be careful crashing into those walls at the Dell. The place might have fallen down.
I was just going to say, on the back of what you're seeing there, Franny, that the Friday mornings when I was playing at Rangers, Friday mornings, Graeme Souness, manager, an aggressive character himself, he would always make us play on the Friday mornings, England against Scotland. Right. So the England players playing against the Scottish lads. And honestly, you've never seen anything like it. Tackles going in, shirts being pulled, elbows in the face, the lot, just to win that game. It was like proper sort of 13th century England, Scotland stuff, you know. But yeah, it's all part and parcel of the game, the physicality of it, the edge. And sometimes that edge gets a bit too sharp. As we saw this week.
That's what they often did, Trevor, didn't they? It was like we didn't have maybe the split of like English versus the Scots, but we had either North versus South or the young'uns versus the old'uns.
I want to know who won the most. Who won the most, Trev? Was it England or Scotland?
Oh, England, mate. England.
I didn't even need to ask that question, did I? Yeah, Any other handbags or anything you remember, Trevor, from, because you played with some tough characters, didn't you? Like, you know, you mentioned Andy Gray there. I mean, he had a bit of a reputation for being nails. You must have played with a few.
Peter Reid. But he was more physical in the, he's a great tackler and put everything, left everything in there. Pat Van Den Howe was, he could be quite reckless. So I think it's all these left backs, isn't it, Franny? So they were probably the standout ones that I can think of.
Any tunnel bust ups or anything similar to what we saw midweek, or?
More Rangers. There was, you know, the Old Firm games. There tended to be one or two skirmishes, depending on what's just happened on the field. And when we had one or two players, even Ali McCoist was quite, let's say physical at times. In those particular games, we had a player called John Brown, who was one of our centre backs at Scottish lad from Glasgow. And John was, he would get his shin pads on for an Old Firm game at about 10 to 2 for the 3 o'clock kickoff. He'd be so hyped and prepped up that our doctor used to have to put a brown paper bag over his head to stop him hyperventilating, right? I mean, you imagine those kind of characters play right on the edge. And Franny was far more like that than I was. I was far more kept out of the physicality because that's the kind of player I was.
Like what happened to Phil Foden, where he got kicked and he decided not to react. Was that something you were more of that ilk, would you say?
That was... Yeah, but the idea as a Phil Foden or a type of player like I was is to avoid getting kicked, right? So that was part and parcel of your development in the game, learning how to do that. And yes, you know, what Phil Foden did would be the sort of kind of reaction that I would have done. I used to get, you know, tackled quite strongly by people like Stuart Pearce, you know, and you just wouldn't react to Stuart Pearce. You just sort of rub your hands, get on with it kind of mentality. But that was just my makeup. That's, I didn't need to get involved in any of that. There were others in the team who would, you know, get my back or look after me.
I think that was like, as you're alluding to there, Trevor, and I saw it with sort of players that I played with in those different types of player, the names such as Jimmy Case, Terry Hurlock, Neil Ruddock, you know, those guys could look after themselves for sure, you know, and look after their teammates as well. But there were the players that weren't that kind of physical player when you could use the physicality in the game, very different to nowadays. But like Trevor's saying, you know, there was a form of bravery, I think, for those players that wouldn't fly into tackles, you know, to actually get on the ball in an era when we played, when defenders and players could actually come in and really have a piece of you, was just as brave as going into a 50-50 with another competitive player, because, you know, the skillful players, the ball players knew that those challenges were going to be coming in, yet you still had to to play your game and do your thing for the team, because that's what they were good at.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to hear you guys discuss that. Trevor trying to get out of the way of people kicking him, and Franny trying to stop himself kicking people. It's quite an interesting little dynamic we got going on there. Yeah, interesting to look back at some of the aggression that we saw midweek in the Champions League. But we're going to revert back to Premier League football next. There's some big games taking place this weekend away from the FA Cup in the top flight. Lots still to be decided, and we'll go through them next after this.
The Dugout. Premier League preview. Football Social Daily. The Dugout. Premier League preview. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back. This is The Dugout from Sports Social, your weekly Premier League podcast with former top flight professionals, Everton and Burnley former winger Trevor Stephen is with me, and Southampton legend Francis Benali joins us also. And we're going to talk Tottenham against Brighton now. It's the early kickoff on Saturday. Every week, the top four favourite seems to change, Trevor. It was Manchester United, it was West Ham, it was Arsenal, and now it's Tottenham Hotspur. Should they beat Brighton, they'll have a nice little cushion. They've still got a North London derby with Arsenal to play. But how close to getting the job done will they be feeling with 7 or 8 games to go? Because in a pressure situation, that must feel like absolutely forever.
Yeah, if I'm honest, I'm quite convinced that it'll be Spurs who take the fourth spot. I think Conte, as a manager that I've admired for a long time, he's getting the reaction from his players that he has been crying out for. It's been such an up and down experience for him, and now he's had that run of games now, which has taken his team into this fourth spot. And Harry Kane is playing as well as he's ever done. The other players have lifted their game. They've set themselves standards now under Conte, and I can't see them letting this slip. So what I'm expecting is a real strong end to the season for Spurs, where they can focus and concentrate solely on that goal of securing fourth place. I'd be very surprised if other teams can get them out of that position. It's theirs to lose. You know, and I don't think Antonio Conte would settle for that. He's not gonna have that. And he will be the most furious man on the planet if Spurs do let this get away from them. I like the way that they've started to play. I mean, you've even got their fullbacks scoring goals. They're spreading them around. It looks strong for me, and it looks as if their spirit as a team is back. You know, you compare that to a Man United, West Ham with that thin squad, Arsenal showing that they've still got that sort of weakness when they need that the strength. Spurs look best suited to me at this stage to secure fourth.
Well, talking of Spurs fullbacks, they might be without Matt Doherty for the rest of the season. He's gone down with injury. That will be a blow to Spurs, considering he's been playing quite well recently. And it won't be easy against the Brighton side, who beat Arsenal last weekend. And Trevor mentions Antonio Conte and how he keeps a grip on things. Brighton won't be pushovers. And how does Conte ensure, Franny, that there isn't going to be one of those infamous Tottenham Hotspur banana skin slip-ups? Because it seems like every time they get into a good position, they get that adverse result. How does Conte ensure that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, good question, Niall. Clearly, I think there's only a handful of games now, and it's just he'll be saying to his team and players, I'm sure, to stay focused, stay in the form that they are at the moment. I mean, only one defeat in their last 7 Premier League games is they're finding that consistency now. They're scoring a bag full of goals. I mean, so the confidence has got to be flying. Is it 25 goals I think they've scored in the last 7 league games? Son and Kane are amongst the scorers right up there again and on form. So, yeah, it'll be pretty much just telling his players to stay focused. Haven't quite seen the running that they've got, so I'm not quite sure what their fixtures are like compared to other teams in and around them. But agree with Trevor that certainly at the moment, with the results they've had recently, the form they're in, they're looking probably best placed to secure that fourth spot. But, you know, we've seen twists and turns, you know, previously, and you just never know. But it would have to take something pretty spectacular to go wrong for them. And with someone like Antonio Conte, you can't imagine the kind of personality that he is, that he's going to allow the team to slip at this stage of the season. If they did, it would just be, you know, they'd have no one else but themselves to blame, really.
Yeah, Tottenham have obviously still got that North London derby to play, which would be big for them against Arsenal. They've also got an away trip to Brentford, which, as we know, this season hasn't been easy. They've got Leicester at home. I think they might even have Liverpool away. Yeah, they do. That's a 7:45 kickoff in early May. So there are still some tough games to come for Tottenham Hotspur, no doubt about it. But their next test, 12:30 on Saturday lunchtime against Brighton and Hove Albion. That one is at home, of course. Manchester United are also at home at Old Trafford, but it's not exactly been the theatre of dreams for them this season. Their Champions League dream of finishing fourth looks like it's in danger of petering out. If Tottenham are going to grab that fourth spot, it will be at the expense of Manchester United and a cluster of other clubs. They face Norwich City at Old Trafford, 3:00 on Saturday, and Norwich arrive having picked up a massive win over Burnley. Let's start with Manchester United first, and from their perspective, Trevor, they could have a new manager in the next few weeks. Erik ten Hag, the Ajax boss, is reportedly being lined up to take over the reins from Ralf Rangnick in Manchester. The players will obviously be aware of that. Do you think we'll see an improved performance from last week's dire display against Everton with the fact that a new manager could be on his way, because they could maybe be looking to impress the new person coming in? Or is that wishful thinking at this stage?
I think your guess is as good as mine, Niall, on this, what kind of team Manchester United will turn out as performance-wise. You're right, and correct word for last week's performance against Everton. It was dire. It was powder puff. There was no connection between anyone on the field, you know, from one to another. And you know, Everton looked, you know, the side who were vying for a fourth spot rather than trying to avoid relegation. That's how bad Man United were. I really don't know. I think there's going to be a big shuffle of the pack when Ten Hag comes into the club. I think he's going to be a good appointment. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Manchester United are no longer the Manchester United of Sir Alex Ferguson and the way the club was run. It is now trying to be a modern football club, but it's made so many bad decisions. It doesn't really know if it's coming or going. And they've got a lot of players who are not given value for the salaries they're on or the position of being a Manchester United player. They're just underperforming. So if you're lucky with Man U, you've got to say, well, Norwich coming to Old Trafford, that has got to be a game where your confidence can be lifted. So if they don't win this comfortably, you've got to say a lot of those players are going to have to, you know, think about employment elsewhere, because this should be a game which they should really absolutely dominate and win comfortably. But Norwich could quite easily go there and get a draw. I can't see them winning it, but they could go and get a draw.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. And we could come on to Norwich in a minute. I just wanted to stay on Manchester United for now. And there has been clamour from some supporters, Franny, to play the kids, as you often hear people say when things aren't going particularly well. United can still finish in the top four. It looks extremely difficult. They'd have to win all of their games and hope that teams slip up around them. So it's looking very unlikely. So do you think that Ralf Rangnick does have cause to play some of the younger players? Because like Southampton, you'll know that, you know, there's quite a famous academy they've got there at Old Trafford. So giving those young players an opportunity, they could be the stars of the future. It's no better place to throw them in, is there, than in a Premier League game like this?
Well, I think, again, just casting my mind back to my playing days, you know, just the way that Southampton seemed to do it back in the day was, you know, or probably most sides, it might just be the last game or two possibly of the season where, you know, you might see a young face or a youngster coming through that gets put into the first team setup. I think quite clearly it can help the players themselves if they get brought into the playing side of a first team environment. And given, like you say, that fourth spot is highly unlikely now, and dependent on other teams, it's out of their hands to a degree that, you know, I don't think any United supporters would be too disappointed to see some players possibly brought in. But then again, you know, you'd have to maybe question, you know, that sort of whole role of Rangnick and the new manager coming in to, you know, is there conversations taking place already? Is the deal done? And, you know, is there players he wants to maybe sign? Yeah, it's just such a confusing scenario at the moment in some ways. So, you know, Ranić could put some players in, and if there's no dialogue between, you know, him and Howe coming in, then, you know, it'd almost be a pointless exercise because he may not consider those players when he takes the job anyway. So it's a real difficult scenario at the moment.
It's shambolic, isn't it? It's a shambolic state to get into, and how they've ended up where they are. And I can't see a quick recovery either. It's not something I think is going to turn around. Even with Ten Hag coming in, it's going to take some rebuilding of that squad because so many of them have to go. They've been given chance after chance to show that they've got something special, which you need to be or need to have to be a Manchester United player. And it doesn't mean say you know you can do lots of stepovers. It means you're a really top pro. And you bring your skills, whatever they may be, to the club. But they've got so many who don't deliver performance from one week to the next. And, you know, you even look at Marcus Rashford. His time at Manchester United has been, it's almost like the dimmer switch is on. It's like there's a great player there. We know it. We've seen it. But he's so far removed from the form that he's had. And there's several others like it. And you talk about your Pogbas and your Fernandes and people like that. They just don't do enough. They just on the team ethic. They're always trying to prove themselves as a great player, missing the point of being in a football team as a team and what the team can achieve. So that has to be reintroduced, I think, into the dressing room at Man United.
Well, as for Norwich, you mentioned how when they come to town, there's an opportunity for their opponents to kind of lift themselves in spirits. I'm not saying that Norwich are the whipping boys because they still have a good chance of staying up. Big result last week against Burnley. They saw Manchester United lose to Everton, which will have been bad for them in terms of the relegation picture. But they can also take some confidence from that. Heading to Old Trafford, Franny, is this the best chance they'll ever get to beat Manchester United at Old Trafford? I mean, there's not many better times you could cherry pick to play United away from home and possibly be in with a chance of winning.
No, exactly. And, you know, they're down to now Norwich, almost the last roll of the dice, really, aren't they? So, yeah, clearly they'll look at it as an opportunity. You know, you've clearly got to say that Old Trafford is no longer holds the fear factor that it once did. And teams will go there thinking they've got a chance, and Norwich have got to somehow take that confidence and belief from that victory they took last week into this game. I can't see them pulling clear out of the relegation zone, in all honesty. Having won only 5 games all season, they're going to probably need another 3 or 4 in the remaining games to have a chance of staying up. So, yeah, you'd have to say it's too little too late for them, but yeah, there's nothing to say that they can't go there and get some kind of result.
Manchester United against Norwich is a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday at Old Trafford. Talking about it possibly being too little too late, what about Trevor's old team Burnley? They face West Ham at London Stadium, 2:15 kickoff on Sunday in the Premier League, and the Clarets are right up against it now. Sean Dyche, for me, in his post-match interview after the recent loss to Norwich, showed the slightest bit of defeatism when he said, "Now we can play with more freedom." Obviously, it's a hugely damaging result, Trevor, for your former team to lose to Norwich. Have they given themselves too much to do now, do you fear?
Yeah, I doubt that there's much, you know, leeway there. I don't think it's not a hugely talented group of players at Burnley. They've been, you know, well coached, well managed over the years, but they've never sort of been a team that's going to be pleasing to the eye. So I don't think the freedom that Sean Dyche is talking about is really realistic.
I just found that comment interesting, the term freedom. It's almost as if he's given up. Not given up, because that's not Sean Dyche's style. It's not his way. He doesn't give up. But it almost felt like a strange thing to say, we can now play with freedom. Like what we say when we talk about sides that have already gone down. Okay, the shackles are off. They know their fate. And the last 3 or 4 games of the season, they can go out and express themselves.
Yeah, that's a dangerous...
I just thought it was an interesting thing to say.
It's a dangerous sort of principle, though, isn't it? If you're going to play with freedom, but you need to play with discipline. And Burnley have been about discipline and how they operate as a side. And to discard that, because it's looking, you know, pretty pessimistic as far as staying in the division is concerned. I don't think that works, really. Maybe it was a bit of a slip of the tongue, if you want, from Sean Dyche, and maybe we are misreading it. But Burnley are on real difficulty. Everton have got themselves a lifeline and are attached to the main part of the Premier League now, whereas I do feel the bottom three need so much luck going forward with results happening elsewhere and trying to collect points themselves. And they go to West Ham. Of course, West Ham have the Europa League challenge for this week. Again, as mileage and competition might give Burnley a chance, but West Ham still have goals themselves. And if you are stuck in the middle, I don't know if it was like that for Southampton last week because of where they are in the league. They can become a little bit less powerful as a unit. West Ham still have that ambition of squeezing into that top four or Europa League somehow. Mm. So they've got a real motivation to carry on.
What do you think, Franny? Final thoughts on this one. Is that the relegation picture sewn up? Should things stay as they are? Because Everton's win last week against Manchester United was big. Burnley losing to Norwich was big, of course. And I think the gap's now 4 points. Leeds have picked up form. Watford keep losing as well. So in terms of the bottom three, do you think we'll see it stay as is, or will there be some shuffling between now and the end of the season?
You just never know. I mean, it would take a monumental effort from someone in that bottom three at the moment. Burnley would be frustrated. Just coming back to your comments about what Sean Dyche said, I don't know, maybe he was trying to publicly take the pressure off his own team. Because as you say, that's not him as a personality or a character, is it, to ever almost be seen to have given up? And I'm not for one moment saying he has at all, because he won't. That's what he's made of. And he'll have that within the club as well and from his players. And they'll keep going. They blew an opportunity. They set themselves up with that victory against Everton, but then to go and lose the next game, it was a huge moment in their season. And you've got to say that with Everton just looking like they can get a result here and there now, that for me, I'd say it's going to stay as it is.
We'll wait and see what happens. Exciting times at the back end of the Premier League season. Fergal will be back on Sunday looking at those FA Cup semi-finals and those respective Premier League games. But that is us done for another week on The Dugout. Massive thanks as always to Francis Benali and Trevor Stephen for their company on today's show. Don't forget, if you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode of this podcast again. We are the only show with a brand new episode on Premier League football every single day of the season. There aren't many days left and it's going to get exciting, I can promise you that. So hopefully we'll catch you again next time. Have a cracking Easter weekend, whatever you're up to, and we'll speak to you again soon.
The Dugout Premier League Preview. Football Social Daily.